Well, they always say the grass is always greener on the other side of the fence. I can't tell in my case at my home because I have fences on both sides that are too high for me to look over and see what the neighbor's lawn looks like. But mine's not the greatest in the world. I can tell you that for free. Larry Mueller here. We're taking a look at your lawn today and maybe mine too, as we talk with Doug Soldat, associate professor in the Department of Soil Science at the UW-Madison. He knows a whole lot about lawns and irrigation and soil sampling. And I hope you'll join in. Give a call at 1-800-642-1234. Maybe you've got something going on with your lawn. Love to hear about it, or maybe something from last year. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And Doug Soldat, welcome back.
Thank you. It's great to be back, Larry.
You just got back from a turfgrass society conference in Ireland.
Portugal.
Portugal.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Tough work.
It is.
How often do you attend a conference like this?
So that's the European Turfgrass Society. They meet every other year. I try to go about every 4 years to kind of stay relevant on what's going on over there.
Are things different there than they are here?
Yeah, it's, you know, the thing I really enjoy going over there is the European Union has a lot different views on pesticides and their application to lawns. So they have a lot fewer tools, chemical tools.
Yeah.
So their research is really highly focused on alternative ways to control pests and grow better grass, which is, of course, what we do here at the University of Wisconsin as well.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to see people that have fewer tools than we do. So I always learn a lot when I come back.
And things that you can apply here,
I assume. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, is it probably a good time to take a look at the lawn? Mine doesn't look the greatest in the world. I mean, it's green and it's thick.
Yeah.
But there's also a lot of Creeping Charlie and a few dandelions.
Exactly. This is a perfect time to assess your lawn because it is warm enough where the grass, it should be growing at about its maximum potential. So this is about as good as it's going to get. And maybe the other time to do that's in the fall. But that's when you want to take corrective action. So right now, looking at it's a good time to see what you got and what you need to do.
Dollar spot much this year? Did you notice early?
It just started the last with the heat and the humidity.
Yeah.
Dollar spot's been happening on golf courses a bit. But
I saw a little bit of it in Canada, actually.
Did you really?
On the course, one of the courses I played there
a couple weeks ago.
Along with the elk, yeah. but that's something that is not a big deal.
Yeah, you know, diseases are, that's probably the main challenge in golf course management. And then for lawns, it's almost very, very rare that the disease will be the main issue of the lawn. Usually it's weeds and then maybe insects coming in second place.
Yeah. Well, John in Sussex has a question for you, so let's go there. Hi, John. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Nice to talk to you. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I have where I used to have my pool, I built a fire pit, but I have a lot of sand left over, and I don't know if it would be best to seed it or put sod. I have maybe an inch of sand. Would that work?
So you have an inch of sand sitting on top of your normal soil?
Correct.
Yeah, I mean, I would recommend you mix that in. If you have a way to incorporate that into, like, you know, the 4 inches, just mix the sand with the soil.
Like a rototiller or something?
Yeah, if you have a rototiller.
That
would probably be the best. And usually we don't recommend that to people because especially if you have high clay, it can cause problems. But in this case where you have the layer sitting on top, I think that's probably going to be your best case. Otherwise, what you're going to see is just it's going to be harder to manage than the area where the sand isn't.
And
it's
always
going to be drying out.
I'd sod it. It was me.
Yeah.
I would
sod
it.
That's a great idea. I'll break out the rototiller.
Okay, good luck with that.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Yeah, you bet. Appreciate the call. Sodding, that probably is a small area.
I like sodding.
Oh, I do too.
You know, seeding is a lot of work. A lot of things can go wrong. I like to sod when I can.
Yeah. Well, let's go to Jake in South Milwaukee next. Hi, Jake. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for having me, Larry.
What can we do for you?
I have an opportunity in the near future here to possibly transfer some established grapevines to my dad's property. I'm hoping to do it as a Father's Day gift.
Okay.
He has had trouble in the past keeping grapevines, and he said they ended up looking sickly and then dying. I'm wondering if there's any soil conditions or diseases I can look out for and possibly prevent when transferring.
Ooh, that's a tough one. That is definitely out of my area of expertise here with the grapevines. I do know that they are sensitive to a number of diseases, and they can be difficult to grow. But I'm not aware of any particular soil conditions where it would cause the grapevines to die. It's likely probably a disease. Or is it full sun, or what kind of environment is it on?
It's probably partly shade. I know the soil is slightly acid and quite clay.
Yeah, so that, I mean, the pH sounds about right, I believe. The shade could be an issue. But again, you know, grapes, they're just not my area of expertise.
Tell you what, there is an extension publication that is really good on grapes. It's called Growing Grapes in Wisconsin. And if I were you, I'd get a copy of that. You can go online to the Learning Store, learningstore.uwex.edu, and it's free. I mean, you can take it off there or just read it online if you want to. But it's called Growing, I'm pretty sure the title's Growing Grapes in Wisconsin. And it might also be on the UW Horticulture website as well. And I would get that because it's got everything from start to finish on grapes.
Yeah, I'm looking at this right now. It's a 28-pager, so it should have a lot of information in there.
Oh, yeah, some great stuff on trimming and all everything. So I'd get a copy of that.
Excellent. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Yeah, appreciate the call. And it's, as I said, it's free. You just go online and read it online. I think you can run copies off.
Yeah.
Why not?
Mm-hmm.
1-800-642-1234. Give a call with your questions and comments. Let's go to Rick in South Range next. Hi, Rick. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. My daughter and her husband just purchased a house about a year and a half ago, and the yard was a beautiful green, but it's 99%+ clover. Huh. I just discovered last weekend that the neighbor told us that they did that on purpose. They came in and tilled it up and planted clover. I have no idea why, but they want to transition to 99% grass. Is there any tips you could provide us?
Yeah, that's actually something I have some personal experience with. My parents bought a house like that with almost all clover, probably not 99%, but with the same situation, and my recommendation was to, for the first year, to just fertilize it three times. So about now, and then another 6 weeks from now, and then 6 weeks from then, and just see what happens. Because clover is really competitive when there's low nitrogen. And when you add fertilizer that contains nitrogen, the grass becomes more competitive. So in this case, my dad went from having a lawn that was mostly clover to the majority grass in season and a half. And then you can go ahead and use an herbicide to get rid of the clover that remains. But applying nitrogen fertilizer is going to it may not look like there's a lot of grass there, but it's underneath, and it'll start to come back.
So probably a higher nitrogen fertilizer then.
But a common lawn fertilizer is normally high in nitrogen.
Yeah,
so,
of course.
So just a normal lawn fertilizer about every 6 weeks, and I think you're going to see the clover start to fade out and the grass come back, and it won't be as bad as you think.
That's great news. Any particular number on that nitrogen?
No, you just want to apply it according to the bag instructions, and they'll have different amounts in them, but all the bag instructions will, if you follow them, they'll have you applying about the same amount of nitrogen, which turns out to be about a pound of nitrogen per 1,000 square feet a yard. But you don't need to remember those numbers. Just buy a lawn fertilizer and follow the bag instructions.
Say, look for lawn fertilizer.
Yeah, lawn fertilizer is important. because it contains a high percentage
much.
Of nitrogen.
Yeah.
Yep.
And you might be fine with they might be fine with the clover that's left, and it does release a little nitrogen into the soil.
Exactly. So. Yeah, and the reason that it was probably there in the first place is because it's a decent ground cover. It does perform well without much maintenance. The bees like it. There's definitely benefits to having clover mixed in with the lawn, but I can understand not wanting 100% clover.
Yeah, for sure. Again, the number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Doug, a little bird. We were talking about sod earlier. You just sodded your lawn, I heard?
I did. I renovated my backyard, so I had to follow the advice I've been given for the years. It's always fun to do that every once in a while. The calluses on my hands are just starting to fade. It's a lot of work, but it's the kids were playing on it last night. It looks really good.
Yeah, and it's kind of I always enjoyed laying sod.
Yeah, well, the laying sod is fun, but the tilling up of what was there, yeah. That was the hard part.
Yeah, that part I wouldn't like.
Yeah,
I worked for R.G. Houston and Son Sodders and Cedars back in the day when I was about 18 years old, and I laid a lot of sod.
Yeah, green side up.
And a lot of seeding too along roadsides. They had a lot of contracts for that.
Sure.
When I first started, I remember I was okay, but a new kid came on and we were short about 2 feet of sod, and the guy says, "John, run back to the truck and get the sod stretcher." So he ran back to the truck, and he comes back 10 minutes later. And says,
I can't find it.
Oh, man. I wonder how many times that got pulled.
Yeah, you know, the funny thing, though, is in the research world, we actually have a sod stretcher.
You do?
Yeah, that's how we measure if a sod's ready or not to be harvested.
It's one of our right?
So it stretches the sod until it breaks, and then the machine tells us how much force it took to break it apart. And then that's the information we use to say, like, this is a really good sod or not. So there is an actual sod stretcher, Larry.
Oh, I'd love to learn that. Thank you. Jason and Marinette, your turn. Hi, Jason.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just had a question about my lawn. It's within the city limits, and it's got a real, real thick layer of dead grass under the living grass. And I hate thatching. And I'm wondering, come fall, if I burnt everything there, would I get a fresh start in the spring and take care of that under layer?
Oh, well, see, you said you're in the city limits. I'm sure there's probably going to be some restrictions.
There may be some restrictions.
I mean, you want to check with your authorities to make sure that that's even possible, and I kind of doubt it is, but check. So burning it is probably not your best option to get rid of that thatch.
No, okay.
I think the burning is going to take care of a lot of the stuff on top, not necessarily get down, because that thatch is usually mixed in with the soil, and it just won't get rid of it.
Yeah, that's what it seems like. It's on top. Maybe it's mixed in there, huh?
Well, if it's not, it's okay. So you've tried using a thatch rake or a dethatcher?
Yeah. I have. This will be the second year in a row that I've. But I don't have a thatch rake. I have a garden rake.
Okay.
And I just rake the heck out of it.
Yeah, you know what? There's a device out there that's mechanical. You can rent these things from rental places, and it's called a power rake or a dethatcher. And it has these knives on it that spin around the axis, and it's gas-powered. And it's relatively easy to operate. And you use it just like a lawnmower, except it's kind of cutting down in there, and it really pulls up a lot of stuff. And that would be my top recommendation.
And they're not that expensive to rent for a half day.
No.
It's really cheap.
Yeah, $20. Yeah, maybe.
Okay. It wouldn't even take me that long. I don't have a huge lawn.
No, it's kind of like I said. It'd be like it would take you about the same time it would to mow, and maybe you want to go over it a couple times, and it'll pull up a lot of material that you're gonna have to rake off. But it'll be easy to rake it off. It's not gonna be attached to the ground anymore.
And that is something I should do. When's the best time to thatch this?
In the fall, usually, because then you're gonna you're really gonna disturb it up, and there's gonna be bare soil exposed. And the fall, we like to do that because there's not a lot of weeds germinating. So if you did it now, all the weeds would be happy; they would just come in immediately. So wait till about September to do that.
And then would you throw some seed down, or would
you? Good time to seed, right? You know, when you have that exposed soil, that's a perfect time to add some seed.
Okay.
But like I said, there just won't be as many weeds competing with that seed in the fall.
All right, great. The wife was telling me that burning was not a good idea, but I wanted to prove her wrong.
Yeah.
But, thanks.
No dice.
Yeah. Yeah, you'll have fun with a dethatcher. They're fun. They're kind of fun to use.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a manly thing, I guess. I guess it could be a womanly thing, too, I suppose. Ron in La Crosse, it's your turn. Hi, Ron. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, I have a problem in my front yard, as well as my neighbors, where the front lawn, after I get done mowing, the stems that are still remaining on the grass are kind of brown, and it's a problem. And I've applied fungicide, and just a moment, I've got to turn down the radio.
Yeah, it's always hard to have that radio up.
The problem is, you know, I think fungus, and I have applied a fungicide, and whether how effective it is, I just want to know, are there any preliminary steps before you apply a fungicide?
First, where's the brown spots? Is it kind of on the end of the leaves?
No, it's on the lower part near the soil. The top part of the grass stem seems to be kind of pretty green. It looks green, but after I get done mowing, boy, can you see a lot of brown stems? And I think it's a fungus, root fungus.
So Larry and I were just talking before the show started, and I was saying that you know, fungus on lawns is actually really uncommon. So it could be, but I think. I think probably. So are you mowing it at a different height? Are you mowing it lower?
Well, when I originally started mowing this spring, I always cut the grass as long as I can. I set the blade at the highest setting, but I moved it down one notch the last couple of times.
So that can do it. That can actually, we call that scalping. And what happens is the plant's leaves, they adjust to where the sunlight is, and they'll be green at the normal mowing height. But when you go lower, it's really, really common to see a lot of brown. And that... I'm going to recommend that you just keep mowing it at that lower height for another 3 weeks, and I'm really certain that you're going to start to see that come back.
You mean take it up to the higher?
Well, are you mowing it lower because you want it lower or for a
different? Well, yeah, I mean, now that the growing degree days have increased, you know, I don't want to have to mow it twice a week. And I shut off the sprinkler system because we've been getting a lot of rain in La Crosse.
You know? Yeah. Yeah, that's a good idea to water it less.
But isn't it true that, Doug, that if you mow it high, it doesn't necessarily mean you have to mow it twice a week?
Yeah, we've done work on this, and that's actually pretty surprising, is that grass grows faster when you mow it lower. Now, I don't know how low you're going, but if you're below 2 inches, it's definitely going to be growing faster than if you mowed it at 2.5.
Well, I've got my mower on the second highest setting.
Okay, so you're in the good range. You're still in the good range. I would say that brown sounds really normal to me, and it's common when you start to mow lower. So that will fade as the plant adjusts to that new mowing height.
Yeah, and I did have a dethatching done this spring.
And that's going to contribute to that brown too. So I would not apply a fungicide in this case. If you continue to have problems in like 3 weeks from now, you can contact me or the Turfgrass Diagnostic Laboratory, and we can have a look at it. And then if there's a fungicide that needs to be applied, we can make that recommendation.
Yeah, I already got your email address.
Oh, good.
My address book.
Good.
Okay, good.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. What's going on with your lawn? You like it or there are some issues? Just want to ask a question? 1-800-642-1234. The number to call. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our producer here, for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you have a cool photo of your lawn and maybe a question about it, you can post that up on our Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. That's the title of the page. And you can post there. You can also email us with a question at talk@wpr.org. And we always love to hear from people on the phone, too. So call us at 1-800-642-1234. We've talked a bit about fertilizing, and you know what? Before we go back to that, let's go to Kristen in Bayview and see what's going on there. Hi, thank you for calling.
You're welcome, Larry. Thanks for having me on. I had a quick question. So your host today said that his lawn is probably not afflicted with a fungus, although I have seen quite a bit of rust affecting lawns in the past, and I'm wondering, could that be what this gentleman is seeing on his lawn?
Yeah, that's a good point. So I guess I would say we do get some diseases on lawns for sure. But whether or not they're damaging to the point where they need to be controlled with a fungicide, I think is a different question. But yeah, rust is common. You know, we're actually seeing rust getting more and more severe over the last 5 or 6 years, it seems. Our pathologist here is studying that, trying to figure out if it's a new variety. But the sod growers have had a lot of trouble with it. Okay. In this case, though, I wouldn't think it was rust, because rust is typically like a late summer or a fall disease. We usually don't see rust happening this time of year.
The only thing that kind of triggered me when he said he had to turn his sprinkler system off, I found that, you know, being in horticulture, like, people ask me a lot of questions about their lawn, and I'm not a lawn expert at all, but I just know that folks with sprinkler systems I've seen a little bit more affliction with the rust.
Yeah,
but that
for
was
sure.
just a comment and a question that I had.
I know that's a great. I'm glad you brought that up. I was one of my first recommendations of people with sprinkler systems is to turn them off, because they cause a lot, probably more problems than they solve. So the best way to use an in-ground system is to literally turn it off and then turn it on manually. Just like you would, like, you know, if your lawn's wilted and you want to water it, just flip it on manually, watch it, and turn it off. But when you have it set automatically, you get a lot of problems.
You get more
it's
water.
Too wet. Yeah.
And when you brought this up, Kristen, when you brought up the fact that of the water, I was reminded of the recent rain. You know, it was 2 inches down in the Watertown. Milwaukee area. I thought, I wonder if rust is going to show up as a result of that, all that rain. Two inches in one rain.
Temperatures in the water and whatnot.
Yep. Another disease we see sometimes is red thread, which kind of produces this little pink structure on it. Then we see that in lawns in this type of weather as well. So there absolutely could be a disease. I didn't mean to give that impression, but I think.
Oh, great. Well, thanks for.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling.
Kristen.
Appreciate your call. Dan in Madison has a question. Hi, Dan. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a very shady backyard. What's a good grass seed to use on a very shady backyard?
Is it dry or wet or normal, do you think?
Extremely dry because of all of the trees, I'm guessing, pulling the water out of the lawn.
Okay, good.
But that's lots of dead patches and just dirt.
So by far the best grass for that situation is going to be a fine fescue. And then the ones that I recommend are a specific variety of fine fescue called chewings or hard fescue. Both of those perform equally, and usually you can find them in a mix together. So fine fescue is what you want. It does great in dry shade, or is better than any other grass we have. And then specifically chewings and hard fescues in that mix of fine fescue is what you want.
Yeah. Now, you're not going to get a thick type lawn under those circumstances.
Yeah, so you have to have the expectation. Grasses evolved in full. These are full sun grass plants. They don't appreciate shade, but the best plants for a dry shade tends to be these fine fescues.
And they're going to look a lot better than a bare lawn for sure.
Bare, yep.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And let's turn to Scott next in Muskego. Hi, Scott.
Hey, hello. My front lawn is okay, but it really grows uneven. And last year I aerated it and put on some new grass seeding. And my neighbors tend to mow their lawn 3-4 times more than what I have to, just because it grows that slow and very uneven. And I have fertilized it, so I don't know if there's something else going on.
Okay. Have you fertilized it this season yet?
Yes, twice. I used Milorganite early, and Actually, I put on two things, one back in March and then one in end of April, early May.
Okay. And you're still getting slow, uneven growth?
And yes. So, I've mowed the lawn maybe four times already this year. That's it.
Okay. Do you have shade or anything like that?
No.
Huh.
Boy.
And is this a new problem or is something that's been happening for a while?
Well, I'm on the home for... I'm told it used to look great. It used to be the envy of the neighborhood, but in the last 4 or 5 years, it just something else has happened where it just doesn't grow. Now the back of my lawn works fine. It's the front yard not so well.
That is really strange. Would you recommend a soil test in a circumstance like this?
Yeah, I'm kind of drawing a blank on it. Usually, nitrogen fertilizer will help even out and get the growth going. But maybe a soil test would be a good idea. Also, and I'm going to give this plug probably several times today. We have a turf grass diagnostic laboratory here at UW Extension, and if you can send some pictures in along with an email, we can maybe get a better diagnosis for you there.
Now, what kind of pictures? You get real close to the blades of grass?
Well, if it's a general problem like this, taking the picture from the distance and kind of describing it, and there might be some follow-up questions about a request for closer-up pictures. So, there's several different types of grass species. It could be a species issue. There could be several things that could be leading to your problem that you're seeing.
So now, how do we do? Where do we go for this?
So I believe the website is tdl.wisc.edu.
All right.
And then if you just Google turfgrass diagnostic laboratory, that should pop up as well.
Yeah, and Malik Anderson's on the phone. Malik, why don't you put that up on our Facebook page, that address. Repeat it once more.
It's tdl.wisc.edu.
There we go. Thanks again for that question, and let's go to Doris in Neillsville next. Hi, Doris.
Yes, how are you?
Great, appreciate the call. What can we do for you?
I'm wondering, I've been bothered with moles in the yard practically every year. When's the best time to apply a product such as Moltox?
Did you say mole or mold as in M-O-L?
Moles, the little organisms that crawl through your
soil. Oh, okay.
And disrupt everything.
Moles, okay.
I am not familiar with Moltox. Have you heard that one before?
No, it's moles, as in little creatures that run around and...
Yeah.
Yeah. There is a product. I've had it in the past a few years ago, and the last I found now was something called Moltox.
Yeah, there's something called Mole Med out there. There was.
What about a Grubex? Would that do the same thing?
Well, it would depend if you had grubs in your lawn.
Well, if you got moles, you got grubs, don't you?
Maybe. They'll also eat worms and other things, too.
There's moles, and they kind of dig down deep, and then there's voles with a V.
Yeah.
And differentiating between those two can be important, too.
When's the best time to apply a product?
It depends. I think what does it look like? Are there little trails?
There are trails. There are also some piles of dirt periodically. One year they destroyed the whole front yard.
Oh, my goodness.
And I've tried the trap, and catching them is too hard.
Interesting. So, well, it looks like the Moltox is a zinc phosphide, which is poisonous to the moles. I don't have familiarity with this type of baiting.
If it's a mole, I had somebody call and had really good luck with getting rid of them with a trap. And well, here's what he did. He took a 5-gallon pail and he put some bacon on a trap, and then he put the trap over one of the holes. And so you're not going to have an animal come other than the mole because it's covered by the 5-gallon pail.
Okay.
And he trapped, I had 9, I think, on his lawn, which would be a huge number. Typically, there aren't very many, but they can cause a lot of damage.
Right. I've tried mothballs too, which haven't been effective.
No, that's not going to work, and they're toxic. Besides, try if you've got a 5-gallon pail, try that once and see if it works.
Okay.
It's a non-toxic way, at least, to experiment. And the mole traps, they're difficult to use, I know.
If you have grubs, when is the best time to apply that?
So if you have a grub problem, you've had that identified, the grub life cycle sort of depends, influences when the right time is. So, for example, for Japanese beetle grubs, which are common, usually about the 4th of July is the optimum timing. But if you have a May-June beetle, which is a different type of grub, the timing will be different. But so identifying the grubs is really key. And you do that, it's just dig down and find these little white guy white grubs, and then the patterns of hairs on their posterior end are how they're identified. So obviously we have the insect diagnostic laboratory here at Wisconsin that
you took a
really
photo and sent it to them. They give you an answer just like that.
Yeah. Yep. They're really okay. Good.
Okay. Thank you so much.
I try the pail and the bacon. Apparently they kind of like bacon. Gary in Sparta, and if it doesn't work, you're not out anything.
That's right.
Gary in Sparta, thank you so much for calling. Hello.
Yeah, I just have a couple questions. The first one is, I have a lot of ants on my lawn. Is there anything that can be done to get rid of those?
Is it a big, like, do you have big mounds?
Well, I wouldn't say they're real big, but, you know, yeah, there's mounds.
Okay.
The sand is so sandy, so maybe that has something to do with it. But I don't know how to describe the size of them, but you know,
if you've got a rod,
mm-hmm.
And you where you need to do is get down into the hole and get down to the boss, who's at the bottom, and if you take a rod and just poke it down as far as you possibly can, and then sometimes mm-hmm. boiling water poured right down that hole will mm-hmm. eliminate the
queen,
the head gal.
Oh.
And once you eliminate her, you've eliminated the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the hard part as well. So we struggle with this in lawns and golf courses, and that controlling the queen is the key. And if you can't get to the queen, usually they don't. They just come back if you just
think that
kill the workers.
I think it's called taro stuff. It's kind of a fine granular that you can sprinkle over the.
Well, so I think what Larry is, he's got a great point here with taking a rod and pushing it down as far, and then you would put the boiling water or the insecticide right down that hole, very localized.
You'd make some boiling, pour some of it in the, if you're going to use it, you would put some right mm-hmm. in the water.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. So you're trying to sprinkling it across the surface is going to be less effective than going right down to the, you know, pushing down the hole of the mound.
One other quick question. I have a sprinkler system too, and I run it every other day. And you said earlier that it sometimes probably causes more problems than it solves. What problems does it cause?
Well, if you have a lawn that's too wet, which is usually the overall, if you have running it every other day, soils are all different, and we don't know how long it runs. But let's say if it's too wet, the roots get more shallow, and the plant becomes more sensitive to all kinds of stresses and diseases. So by keeping it drier, the roots go down deeper, and you just have a much healthier plant.
Is it the same rule about an inch of rainwater a week? Is that about the same?
That's a ballpark figure, but if it rains an inch in the week,
you're not going to be.
You're
but,
over, right.
But if it doesn't rain at all, or if it rains a quarter of an inch,
yeah, exactly. So grass uses about an inch of water a week, and that's a rough guide. But you definitely don't want to just set your sprinkler system to apply an inch a week.
No.
Yep.
I have a sensor, so when it rains, it'll shut off the sprinkler system.
Sure, but I mean, the sensors are good, absolutely good, but they're probably not sensing how much rain. So if we got 2 inches of rain, you won't need to irrigate for at least a week, is my guess.
Probably longer.
And so, but your system's going to go back on in 2 days.
Yeah.
So,
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate the call. Well, Greg in Cottage Grove has something for us. Hi, Greg.
Hey, Larry and Doug. Doug, I just wanted to give you an update after about 5 years. You helped the rugby club out there with our new field. Do you remember that?
Yeah, for sure. I had a few students out there, too.
It went great. Yeah, what we did was we got hooked up with Milarganite, and then Purple Cow is one of our alumni, and they help us out with top dressing twice a year, and then we bought that real heavy-duty aerator you recommended.
So good.
Everything's lush and green, and we use really no pesticides or anything.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, I should get out there and see it. I don't think I've been out there since.
Well, yeah,
since
Larry,
I wanted to say
you worked for Houston at one time.
I did.
Yeah, because they're the ones that built them. So you guys should come out sometime and have a beer and look.
We could do
this.
A show on location.
Do a show out there. Yeah.
Anyway,
Doug, your advice is really good. The only question I have, which we always discuss, is we got one of those big water cannons. You know, that extends over the field and reels in. So we can actually put an inch of water down, but should we time that to be done right as the sun rises in the morning? Or I've heard, you know, you don't want to do it in the heat of the day because of evaporation.
Yeah, that's the best. The best time to water be in the early morning, for sure.
So that's what we figured. It's just a matter of getting the
logistics right. Yeah.
At midnight to run it, because it takes about 6 hours to do a trip, but otherwise, your advice is great, and we really appreciated that. And we're still playing rugby in the field.
Good, good, yeah. And if you, if you have a second best time, it's going to be in the evening. So the worst time to irrigate is going to be in the mid heat of the day.
Okay, so we'll do. Yeah, and we're cutting it at 3.5 inches, so it stays pretty.
Pretty nice. That's a great height, isn't it?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah, it's not perfect for really, really fast turf, but it's a lot less work when you're dealing with all volunteers. So keep it a little longer.
Absolutely.
But thanks for your advice, and come on out sometime, you guys.
All right, Greg, thank you.
Yeah, have a beer ready, and we'll be out there. There you go. Take a look at that. That's great to know. And Dale and Dwight Houston were a couple of the guys that the sons of Raleigh Houston that I work for out there. Speaking of Dales, here's a Dale in Madison. Hi, Dale. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. So I have a backyard and a dog, and she plays with her boyfriend. And for the last 3 summers, I have tried very hard to grow grass, and each spring, a lot of mud grows. So this year, I decided to aerate, which I did. I planted seed. I put on the Milarganite, and I'm keeping the dogs off of it.
Mm-hmm.
The guy at the hardware store told me that it would maybe be a good idea to do a soil pH test.
A pH test. And Dale, you're breaking up so bad. I'm going to cut in right now and see what Doug's got to say.
Yeah, so soil pH is not likely your issue. I see you're in Madison here, and we do have alkaline pHs. pH is above 7 in a lot of our soils, and that's never going to cause a problem for grass. It can cause problems for certain ornamentals, certain trees, but for grass, that's probably not likely your issue. It sounds like you've done a lot of the right things this spring, and it's still very early in the process, so the grass is really just starting to get going. Keep the dogs off of it. You aerated it, which is a good time to put down seed. So you fertilized it, so I would maybe schedule another fertilizer application in about 3 or 4 weeks from now, assuming we still have rain and the grass is green.
Do you have a recommendation for what kind of fertilizer?
General lawn fertilizers are good. I don't have a specific brand I like to recommend. I like slow release nitrogen, which of course Milarganite has a lot of. So if the bag says it contains slow release nitrogen, that's going to be a good option. But that nitrogen fertilizer will help that lawn thicken up over the year. But a lot of the things you said are right on point.
Would Milarganite be an issue if you put it down with seed? Would it affect germination or not?
No, it's a good. A lot of golf courses use Milarganite in their divot mixes with the seed mixed in.
Oh, excellent!
So it definitely doesn't impede seeding.
Okay. So there you go, Dale. Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it very much. Doug Soldat, our guest today from the Department of Soil Science at UW-Madison, talking with him about your lawn. Larry Mueller here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here taking a look at your lawn today with our guest, Doug Soldat. Great to have him with us. By the way, next week on Garden Talk, we'll talk about the lasting effects of late frost and leaf diseases. We'll also take your gardening questions, of course. So that's next week on Garden Talk. Right now, you can join in. One open line at 1-800-642-1234. Go ahead and email us at talk@wpr.org or post a photo of your lawn or a question about your lawn on our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. That's the title of the page. John and Madison up next. Hi, John.
Hi. I fertilized my lawn about 2 weeks ago, and then I'm on the east side of Madison. We haven't gotten much rain, but it's just been little tiny drizzly amounts, and I think I put a little too much fertilizer on, and I'm getting some burn marks where, like, the overlaps were and stuff. What can I do to fix that?
There's not much you can do. That's definitely a symptom. Of over-fertilization. Well, the damage is usually done right away. So as soon as you see the brown, it's too late to do anything. The good news is you almost certainly have Kentucky bluegrass, and that the stuff that didn't die is going to be growing pretty vigorously because of that nitrogen, and that will fill in over. So how wide are these strips?
Well, it's not, it's just like where it's not like big, long strips like that, but it's like where the overlap was.
Yeah.
And then where you like turn the thing around or something, there's like a little burnt spot there. And
that'll come back. It'll come back. I would just leave it. It's going to look ugly for a couple weeks, but it'll August still be totally fine.
I'm with you on the lack of water on the east. I live on the east side too, John, and it's we have not gotten. I was hoping for some rain. I was just hoping for some rain the other night and we just didn't come.
Hmm. Yeah, I just got a little bit of drizzly rain. It wasn't enough to wet under the trees.
No, I believe me, I know. I was checking it out this morning, and you're right. Well, there you go. Thanks a lot for calling. I want to give Bob and Marquette a chance to join in. Bob, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. How are you?
Great. Appreciate your call. What can we do for you?
Hey, so up in the UP, we're along Lake Superior. I'm about two blocks off the lake. And most of this land is primarily sand and sand dunes. Am I correct?
Well, there's a lot of sand. Marquette, Michigan, right?
Yep.
Yeah. There's a lot of sand there. There's no doubt about that.
Okay. So my question is, how I watch my neighbors, and again, I just think that, one, there shouldn't be grass. Is it fair to say that environmentally or whatever, in a normal world, we don't have lawns on sand dunes or on grass?
Actually, if you think about where the grass grows, as you go towards a desert, the last thing you hit is a grassland.
Oh, okay.
So the question is, should the grass be green on sand?
Yeah.
But in terms of can it survive, it's actually one of the better options. It's a decent option. So keeping it green, though, is going to take more water than we'd like to use.
So then if it needs more water, my next question is, what about fertilizer and what about things that give your lawn, meat, like the peat and things like that you can put down that give it a little bit more substance?
Yeah, so that's an excellent option is to incorporate compost. Would probably be the best thing to increase the water holding capacity and also provide some nutrients. So there's no question, growing a lawn on sand is a difficult task. I would recommend using a fine fescue grass, chewings or hard fescue particularly. Incorporating compost before you do that is going to provide nutrients and hold water. So those are the key elements that are going to make growing a lawn a lot easier on a sand.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that I always marvel at is these guys all get one of those aerators every year, and isn't that like silly? with sand underneath.
Yeah, that's that. You're right. So usually an aerator is better on a heavier textured soil to remove the compaction, because that's one benefit of sands is they don't really compact to the point where the grass can't grow. So
you're digging up a lot of grass roots when you use one of those machines.
Right. So if you don't need it, you don't want to use it. But they can be helpful in especially clay or silt loam soils.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last thing is grubs. And, again, I get a lot of rooting with the skunks and the squirrels. How do you manage?
I'm surprised you have grubs. Yeah.
Well, I'm shocked, to tell you the truth. And I'm shocked by the amount, because we'll get mornings where I wake up and there are holes all over the lawn from the skunks and the squirrels.
Yeah.
Is it squirrels go after them too? Is that correct?
I wonder if they're going at, well, squirrels might be doing something else. Skunks probably
definitely
are.
Definitely skunks. Yeah. Raccoons as well. So, so again, like we said earlier from a different caller, is that if you can identify the grub, the insect diagnostic laboratory can give you an optimum timing for controlling with an insecticide. That's the key.
Okay.
So, for example, if it's Japanese beetle grub, around the 4th of July is a good time, the most effective time to apply an insecticide to control the grubs.
And Larry, longtime listener, I grew up in Milwaukee, and you rock.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks a lot for...
three of my kids are listening, and they all say hi.
Well, hi back to them. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Yep, bye-bye. Take care. All right, Bob in Marquette, Michigan. Well, you know what? Here's another Marquette, Michigan caller. So let's go to Joe in Marquette, Michigan. Hi, Joe.
Hey, Larry. I heard earlier one of your callers asking about dealing with moles on her lawn.
Yeah.
Something about a 5-gallon bucket and bacon in a trap.
Yep.
For about a year, I worked as a wildlife control technician in southern Ohio, and we dealt with a lot of moles down there.
Mm-hmm.
But we actually tried not to use the traps. In my case, it was because they looked kind of scary and they were really temperamental, and I didn't think they worked very well.
Oh, yeah, those traps are, I don't think they work well either. I was talking about like a mouse trap.
Mm-hmm. Now, what we usually did was we got a type of mold poison from Bell Laboratories called Talprid, T-I-L-P-R-I-D. It's shaped like an earthworm, about 6 inches long.
Yep.
And they come in a box of about 20. So we would take a piece of steel rebar, find one of the tunnels between two of those big hills of dirt they push up, poke a hole about a half an inch wide, drop one of the worms in there, and cover it back up. We do that about 5 or 6 times over a whole lawn, plus or minus, depending on how many moles there were, and that usually took care of the problem in about a week.
You know, I had completely forgotten about Talprid, and I've seen it, and other people have said it worked too, and I actually completely forgot about it. And it's available. Homeowners can purchase it.
I'm pretty sure.
Oh, yeah.
I used to think that you need to be certified, but when I heard that, I quickly looked it up, and you can just buy it online.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I know others have said that's been effective. So thanks, Joe, for that reminder. Completely forgot about it.
No problem.
Yeah, appreciate the call. All right. And Chris in Madison, your turn. Hi, Chris.
Hi, thanks for the show. Okay, here's the situation that I have. Is in my backyard, I've got a nice lawn. I think I work hard at it. I am getting several, and when I say several, I mean about maybe 10 to 15 anthills in the back of, in my backyard. And I've gone out and I've bought things that I've sprinkled on there, some of the stuff I had to water in after I was done. I also went to some, elaborate type of powder that I put down that's waterproof. It seems to kill the ants in the specific hill. But then what's happening is the ants are starting then to go around where I've treated and then start all over again. Yeah. And it's just tearing up my lawn. And I'm wondering...
Yeah, you didn't get to the queen ever.
That's the problem with ants, and that's why they're so difficult, is because you can kill the workers with those methods you're saying, but then the queen is still there, and they just keep coming back. So you got to get the queen.
So how am I going to get to the queen besides asking her out for dinner?
I talked about it a little earlier on the show, but if you've got some sort of a metal rod that you mm-hmm. can stick down that, right in the middle, as deep down as you can. Maybe even take a maul and, you know, grab it down there.
Okay.
And then you pour the, like, boiling water. Maybe you can mix it with some of that, those granules that Doug was talking about earlier.
Okay.
Right straight down the hole. And that, the queen's way down deep.
Okay. Okay, because, boy, I tell you, it's sure wreaking havoc on my lawn. So,
well, you're going to get rid of the queen, and then you get rid of everybody else leaves. Everybody else is gone.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for the show and for your time today. Have a great rest of the day.
All right.
Thanks, Chris.
Appreciate the call. We have Chris wondered from Appleton if what sort of grasses and flowers can he plant in his lawn to make it more colorful and friendlier to bees.
Oh, yeah, grasses. So grasses tend not to have a lot of color. But,
clover.
Clover is a good option. Bees love clover. And it
works in well with a lawn.
World War II, we had clover was a really common mixture of a lawn seed mixture.
So, part of it, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're actually seeing that come back. So at our research facility here in Madison, we have we've planting different types of clover in with grasses and seeing how they do. And it's not only does it have a flower, it provides something for the bees to pollinate. It keeps the grass thicker. So there's a lot of reasons to like clover.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, our guest today, Doug Soldat. Doug's an associate professor, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's an associate professor in the Department of Soil Science at UW-Madison with a PhD in horticulture, specializes in turf grass, urban soils, nutrient management, soil testing, landscape irrigation. Our guest on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at your lawn today on this edition of Garden Talk, I'm Larry Mueller. My guest, Doug Soldat, associate professor in the Department of Soil Science at UW-Madison. Great to have him along and great to have you listening in. If you have questions, please join in. 1-800-642-1234, the number to call. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Caller's online, so let's go to the phones. Rod and Weyerhauser, it's your turn. Thanks for calling, Rod.
Thank you. Good program. Say, I got a comment and then a question, but the comment was on about that man from Michigan in the fan. I'm just wondering if he tried sorghum. You know, sorghum roots go down about 14, 15, 16 feet, I guess. And if you cut it, I think my neighbor tried it, farmer. If you cut it, you can cut it higher up. It'll grow yet. For green manure, you know, to build it up, you know, that sorghum, and you're more that you planted. And the other question is, I'm making a pond now. If I put buckwheat on there, they claim that'll just about go on concrete, but the only thing is, nothing else will grow. But I'm just wondering about bluegrass, blue joint.
On blue around joint, a pond?
Blue joint, it's a native hay, I guess.
Kind
of grew out here, native grass.
And I don't know that native. And it's that's that one might be out of our realm here today. Ponds around a pond. Do you ever do grasses around just lawn grasses type around a pond?
Yeah, I mean, is it it's, so it's wet all the time? Is that
well?
Right?
It's been raining up here, and it erodes. You know, it totally erodes away. You know, it's heavy soil, but I mean, you know, it's eroding away, so. I mean, I'm going to put the buckwheat sparingly, I guess, but they say nothing else will grow with it.
No, I wish I could help you out on that. We could help you out on that one, but I don't know if you've got a heavier soil and if it's not wet all the time, you could probably do a grass. I mean, grass grows right up to the edge of lakes, for goodness sakes.
Right. So Kentucky bluegrass is, I don't know if it's the right choice for this situation, but it will grow in relatively moist soils as long as it's not like standing water. And it's a great erosion control. It forms a dense, that's the thing, you want a dense cover, and that's one thing that grass like bluegrass is going to do, is going to form a pretty dense cover. But yeah, you'd have to mow it and maintain it, and if you're not doing that, if you're not mowing it frequently, you tend not to get that density.
Yeah, so Beyond that, I don't think we can help you out. You might look at a place, I'm trying to think, prairie nursery type place.
Yeah, with some of the more native native options for specific sites.
Yeah, I would look at some native grasses, and I'm just not qualified to talk about it, but a nursery, a native plant nursery, and there's, I mentioned prairie, but there are many, many of them in the state, good ones in the state, and you might want to check with them because a lot of times they'll have a specific seed mixture that you can put around in different areas depending on the area, and they may have one for around ponds. So I think I'd go that way. I'd look into that a little bit. Go to one of the native nurseries like Prairie Nursery, see what they've got. And thanks for calling. I wish we could be more helpful on that one. We have Harriet in Richmond County. Sorry. Your turn. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
What can we do for you?
Well, we have a construction site, and we are now ready to plant some grass. And the weeds have taken over waiting for us. And they're probably about knee-high. And I was wondering, is it a good idea to kill all the weeds before we put the black dirt down and seed?
Yeah, that's. I would definitely kill those weeds.
Okay.
There's a variety of ways you can do it. If you can just chop them down with, like, a flail mower, that's a good option. And then just till them up and get them out of there. Make sure there's no, you know, if but you want to get them before they go to seed.
Yeah,
sure.
That was running through my mind too.
But yeah, you want to get rid of those weeds before you go ahead and bring in black dirt and seed.
Okay, all right. Thank you very much.
And good luck.
And by the way, you should probably would you be, if you're bringing in black dirt, if the dirt, depending on how much you bring in, you kind of want to mix it in a little bit, don't you, with the existing soil?
It almost never happens.
Yeah.
For a variety of reasons, but yeah, the more you can create an interface there, or lessen the interface between the
subsoil.
Yeah,
we have a big tiller that
okay,
down, oh, I don't know, 6-8 inches anyway.
Okay.
Oh, good.
That is very good. After you get that black dirt down, then mix that in.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks very much.
Good luck.
Thanks a lot for calling. And let's go to Mary in Appleton next. Hi, Mary.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. Appreciate your call. What's on your mind?
I would like to know if corn gluten is effective as a pre-emergent against black medic, which is spelled M-E-D-I-C.
Sure. Yeah, so corn gluten meal is a chemical that's produced naturally by corn, and it's a byproduct of corn milling. And if you put it down at exactly the right time, about a week or two before the seeds are germinating, it will prevent almost any seed from germinating. Grass seeds, crabgrass weeds, black medic seeds. But the thing with black medic is it's a perennial. And so it does flower and produce seeds, but it also spreads with stolons.
So it's a perennial? I thought it was not an annual?
Black medic, I'm almost positive black medic is a perennial like clover.
Oh, dear.
and it behaves almost exactly like clover terms of how it lives on a lawn. So that's going to be your problem, is that it may prevent new seeds from germinating, but it's also going to just continue to spread and survive.
Okay. Would it be applied at the same time as you'd put down a commercial fertilizer for crabgrass?
Yeah.
Is that the same kind of timing?
Exactly. The timing is really important for corn gluten to be effective, and it's about the crabgrass timing.
Okay.
So kind of
all right.
May-ish, early May.
There you go. Good luck. Thanks, Mary, for calling. Lynn in Barnum, Minnesota, your turn. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for being on the air. I have a quick question. I bought a house 2 years ago, and I have a thistle problem real bad in my yard. I keep digging them up, but do you have any suggestions?
What kind of thistle? Do you know what kind of thistles you have?
No, I don't.
Are they flat to the ground, or are they ones that grow up high?
No, they're the ones that grow up high.
Could be Canada thistle.
Canada thistle, yeah,
that,
which is one of the hardest
they're
to
hard,
control, and they're
miserable.
Nasty. Yeah, So they reproduce with rhizomes, so they'll kind of creep under the soil, and they even when you kill them, they tend to come back because they have a growing point below the soil. Mowing's going to be an important thing, because you want to have a nice mowing height, a good mowing regime. You want to keep your lawn dense with 2 to 3 applications of fertilizer. Those are the strategies to keep it from spreading. And then in terms of spot treating with herbicides that specifically list thistles on their label is going to be probably your best strategy. But Canada thistle is one of the hardest ones.
Especially after you cut them down, if you can apply spot apply.
Yeah.
On a cut.
So how are they everywhere? Are they in
They're in the backyard. They're not in the front yard, but I have a huge yard. I got like a 2-acre yard altogether, and I'd say the backyard's about an acre, and it's everywhere. I spent 3 hours yesterday digging them up, you know.
You're not going to get them digging them up if it's Canada thistle. You'll get rid of the ones that are there, but then those come right back.
They keep coming back. So one of the timing recommendations we usually make for these things, if you're going to use a chemical, the fall is the time where the thistles are storing things down in the root system, and then if you apply that herbicide in the fall, translocates it down into the roots, and then it kills the plant. In the spring, this time of year, it's harder to do that because the thistles are actually growing. The compounds are moving up towards the leaves. But I think those things we said, have a sharp mower blade, mow your grass frequently, keep it dense, and then spot treat those with an herbicide in the fall. The digging is, you know, that's going to help as well. But it's going to be a constant battle. I wish I had an easy answer for you.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. And Jeff in New Berlin has a question. Hi, Jeff.
Hi. A couple questions. I'm going to start out with the tough one for me. I have an infestation of creeping Charlie, but I also have a raised bed garden that's got a lot of beautiful black dirt that I'm going to be distributing. Creeping Charlie, I believe, is a very shallow-rooted plant, and I'm wondering, can I just cover it up with the dirt and then overseed that? Or do I need to somehow try to kill off the creeping Charlie, which I think is almost an act of divine intervention?
Oh, yeah. So creeping Charlie is, again, it's one of those really tough weeds to control. It tends to be, is it shady in the spot where the creeping Charlie
No,
is?
It's actually not, but it's really strange because last year I treated it with some Ironex, and the areas that I treated it in the fall, it seemed to knock back pretty hard, but it was almost like it got mad and it propagated to another area.
Came back hard.
It infested a part of the backyard. It was almost like a rash broke out.
Yeah, so it moves with stolons, which are stems that grow kind of across the surface.
Right.
And so it moves really quickly. And you know, the mower can chop off a piece and distribute it that way.
That's what happened.
Yeah, so one way to get rid of them, are you killing everything where the creeping Charlie is?
Well, no, that's what I'm asking. Like I said, I have probably 6 yards of dirt that I'm going to be distributing over the property, and I just thought because it's so shallow, I'm wondering, can I just cover it with dirt and then reseed, because I'm going to be putting a little bit of a grade on that area as well, obviously. I thought, boy, that would be the easy way, but I don't know if it can grow through a little bit of soil, because I know it's more of a surface.
Yeah, right. So it kind of depends on how deep the soil you're distributing is. Obviously, there's going to be a depth where it's not going to be able to come out. But knowing what I know about Creeping Charlie is that even if one little node survives that burying process, it's going to quickly spread again.
Right.
So your best option would be to get rid of it first. I was going to say one thing people do sometimes in an area where they're killing everything is they'll just put some black plastic down for a couple weeks.
Okay.
And that excludes the light, and then it gets really hot under there and it will just kind of kill everything without any chemicals, and then you can spread the dirt on top of that.
Okay.
But I would say I would be a little nervous about just burying it. You can try it, but I'm going to say that there's definitely a chance that creeping some of that creeping Charlie will survive it.
What do you? Am I just lucky that the iron X seemed to knock it back when I applied it in the fall, or is that?
Iron products. Iron X is one of them. They will burn back leaves of a lot of plants and not grasses, but they're not killing the plant completely. They're just burning it back, and then the plant will grow again.
Oh, okay.
So that's a pretty common response. And then after several applications of the Iron X, you might make some headway, but it's definitely not going to be a one-time thing.
And what if you did that in the fall with the Iron X or put it on, and then in the fall you laid down the soil, and then you seeded did a fall seeding to get the grass going?
Well, for these iron products, and this is one of the only herbicides allowed in parts of Canada, what they're finding is that applications every 2 weeks are good. So if you make three applications 2 weeks apart,
okay,
you can kill it. So you can try that. Instead of a single application, go for every 2 weeks, and you might actually get some real good results with that.
And then the birds or the neighbors are going to bring it in again.
Yeah, it's a struggle. But
I have
density.
One other quick question, if I may.
Sure.
Prairie, we've got a big chunk of property behind us that this gentleman's willing to let us turn into somewhat of a wild prairie, if you will. I believe there's some kind of prairie seed mix, and I guess I'm wondering two things. Number one, 2 years ago he planted some kind of a very fast-growing grass. Can we just overseed it, or do we need to have him till everything under and start over with a prairie mix? And does the prairie mix have more than just the flowering plants? Does it have other types of grasses? I don't know enough about that.
Yeah, there's all kinds of different prairie mixes, and they usually contain mixes of grasses and forbs or broadleaf plants and flowers. What you'll find is those mixes are really expensive, and so you want whatever you do to that, you want that to survive. And overseeding is not a really high survival strategy.
No.
Okay.
So if it were me and I was going to spend the money on that prairie mix, I would absolutely be killing my grass that was there and tilling it and just really babying that mix.
It's a bit of work the first couple of years.
Yeah.
Now he's actually got a tractor. He can till it like a small little lot of farm and turn it pretty good into a soil-like composition. Is that sufficient to the word killing, or do we need to do more than that?
If he can bust it up and till it under, sure. Yeah.
Depending on the weed, I mean, is there a lot of quack grass out there?
No. Because he planted whatever kind of grass he planted, it used to be a little plot of an organic farm. It grows really fast.
Okay.
And I'm mowing it for him, but I have to mow it like twice a week. Just so my mower doesn't stop. But I think that's what I want to know, if he's going to have to retill under so that we can kind of start with a fresh plot of soil to have a successful chance.
Yeah, you're gonna want to seed into fresh soil with that prairie mix.
Okay.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. And some people would say try and kill the grass first.
Yeah, that's the best.
That is by far the best.
You don't have a chance of that grass coming back up and contaminating your nice prairie mix that you had.
Yeah, for sure. Chris in Wanakee, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. My question is somewhat similar to the last part of the last caller. I've got a place up in Bayfield County, and the former owners had planted grass, about a half an acre of grass, and we're not really excited about having so much grass. And so we're trying to let part of it kind of go wild, and we're just not cutting it, but, it doesn't seem to be doing much. I kind of thought nature would step in and start dropping seeds or doing stuff, but it sounds like
it's just long grass.
I mean, the grass just kind of gets falls over and matted and stuff. But would that eventually die from on its own, or and be taken over by some other things coming in, or?
Yeah,
we
do that at a research station as well. We'll just stop cutting an area, let it grow up, and see what happens. And typically what we see, even after several years, is what will come in are things like wild carrot. Some pretty undesirable weeds will pop in, if anything. And then the grass just kind of sits there and gets long, right? So, which is okay in certain situations, but if you're looking for a different look, you're going to have to do what we told the previous callers. The big work of killing what's there, tilling it up, and then starting with a mix of those diverse plants that you're looking for.
Or I could cover it in plastic.
Yes.
Thyme or something, and let it peel off, and then would natives come up, or what would tend to sprout then?
Yeah, the problem is that usually what happens is that we have so many invasive species and weeds around that are really good at colonizing open soil areas, is that those are, if you don't do anything, that's what you're going to get, is this mix of undesirable weeds.
All right.
So it's quite a bit of work to get what you're looking for. But
I'm not into quite a bit of work right now.
I hear you. Go up to Bayfield, you want to relax.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. But thanks for the tip.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And you've got a good extension guy up there in that area. And, oh, my goodness, I almost blanked out. Go to your UW Extension office, and I can't believe it. He's been a guest on my show many, many times. He's very good, and he would have some additional recommendations, I think, for your area, because he would know your area very, very well.
Matt, is it Matt Cogger?
No. I can't. I'm embarrassed to say that I can't think of his name right off the top of my head. But if you go to the UW, go online, find your UW Extension office up there, and his name may come to me in the next minute or so. So stay listening. As soon as you hang up, I'll remember. So stay listening, Chris. But get a hold of him, and he'll have some advice on the proper plants that your seeds that you can put in there. That would help a lot.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Oh, my goodness. Craig in Madison, hi.
Hello. I think my question was answered just a few minutes ago. I was calling about Creeping Charlie. I have clover. I have some milkweed. And I have a beehive in my yard and do not want to harm any of those. And the Creeping Charlie has taken over just about everything. And I think I heard the answer would be to cover it with a black piece of plastic and starve it to death.
That's a good strategy. It's going to kill everything underneath it and give you the opportunity to till that up and plant some seed.
Got any kids? If you had some. I always go out with my daughter on the lot, and we spend an hour pulling Creeping Charlie, and it actually gives the grass a little head start on it, and it actually I can pick in an area and I won't have it the rest of the summer. So
will clover knock it down?
Oh, clover?
Yeah, I have a section of clover in my yard that it seems to not have as much Creeping Charlie in there.
Well. Maybe. We have research plots where we look at different weeds, and we see dandelion, clover, and Creeping Charlie tend to make up about a third of each of those. So I think they share well. I don't think that they necessarily exclude each other.
Okay.
All right.
I'll let you go on. Thank you very much for your time. Have a good day.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And Ronald in Madison. Hi. Oh, can't hear him. We lost him on. He wants to know about getting rid of bishop weed. Can you do that in about 30 seconds?
Oh, boy, what's bishop weed? I don't know that one.
I don't know that one either. Nuts. Ronan, I'm sorry. We can't hear you. So we're going to have to, we may have to take a pass. Can't find it right now. I'm sorry.
Sorry. I don't know bishop weed.
On that note, we're going to have to close. Doug, thank you so much. It's always a great pleasure to have you with us, and we'll look forward to your next visit. Thanks.
Excellent. Thank you, Larry.
Doug Soldat, associate professor in the Department of Soil Science at UW-Madison, our guest, and he'll be back, and we'll do it all over again with him. Next week on Garden Talk, again, late frost and leaf diseases, one of the things. Take a look at the lasting effects of those. And Monday, the Wisconsin Energy Institute, Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center folks will be joining us. So in the meantime, hey, we got lots in store. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.